Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path. Ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Today on the Militant Grind podcast, we welcome Liz Wolf, an innovative business coach whose entrepreneurial journey began on a family sheep farm. After facing early challenges and learning valuable lessons from starting a business 25 years ago, Liz crafted a unique coaching formula based on asking powerfully, giving wholeheartedly, and receiving graciously. Through her method, she empowers entrepreneurs to overcome obstacles and achieve abundant success. Liz, how are you today?
I am very well, Sherman. Thank you so much for having me on.
You are very welcome. Very welcome. So I am not from a family farm. I have no idea how farms work. I'm from born and raised in Los Angeles. So I would not know how you started a business on a farm. So how did that come about?
Necessity, largely. When I was about 5 years old, my mother, who did, now this is early 60s, or no, I'm sorry, late 60s. It was very still a traditional model, but there was a lot of social upheaval and quote unquote, the women's lib movement, et cetera. She didn't want to live a standard life. And although it was a beautiful one in Pittsburgh with her three daughters, in the Pittsburgh area, there's a lot of farmland. It's quite rural actually. And so she went on together with my father, bought a 148 acre farm, which when we started had no animals on it. And by the time we were done, we had about 300 sheep and chickens and ducks and horses and cows and all kinds of stuff. So they got divorced. And although my father has 100% always been a solid rock of support in our lives, we had to figure out how to make some money. So my mother is a very creative fiber artist, and she learned how to spin, and we made yarn and we made sheepskin clothing, and giving you the very short version of many years of developing products and getting out there and doing festivals. And it was a necessity for us to pay the bills. And we got pretty good at it, actually.
Really? So there was no man on the farm at all to help you at all?
No, there was not. Dolores Wolf and Daughters. Wolf's the name, sheep's the game. That was our tagline. Okay, get our last name's Wolf. And not to say that we never had men around. We certainly did. We had actually a lot of college students who loved to come. Again, this is late 60s, early 70s. So they would come and like sleep in the barn and just work on the farm. And it was very interesting. My mother was, of course, the farmers are always thought of as men, but the farmers' wives also work very hard and on the farm. It's not like they don't, but she was definitely a standout person, being one woman sheep farmer in a sea of men dairy farmers. And so it was quite the splash actually in Western PA at the time.
Wow, what an example to look up to. And I've been on farms and I'm like, oh God, it stinks, you know? So it's like all of the stuff that you would have to overcome to even be able to be comfortable working on the farm is just like great to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so what kind of lessons did you learn? Because that's not like the average American life. So what sets you apart from someone else? That, because I know you talk to people that grew up in the city and things like that, right? So do you look at those people like, oh my God, what are you complaining about? I used to have to cut up my own animals and eat. You know what I mean? Like I had to go out there and pick the eggs for the chicken and make breakfast. You guys are complaining about this? Oh man, come on.
Yeah, I always like to say the hardest job is making hay. You got to go out in the hot. You can only make it when it's hot and sunny, because if it's raining and cool, it's not, you can't make hay. And you go out and you're picking up these 50, 70-pound hay bales and throwing them up into the wagon and taking them in the barn and stacking them up. Whenever my kids would complain, I'd be like, "Oh, sure, if you want to compare that to my childhood, go right ahead." Funny enough, I married a man who grew up in Queens, right? So he has zero experience. He only got to visit the farm one time. And he always, this is the story he likes to tell. Because by the time we got married when I was around 30. By the time I met him and everything, my mother was wrapping up her experience there. And so we went out, but we still had sheep. And she said, "All right, we got to go out and call the sheep down, like to the barn." And he thought we were going to go out and go, like, you'd have a duck call, like, bah. And so to call the sheep down, you would go out and you would say, "Home, sheep." And then they would lift up their heads and they would hear that. And you train them to come down by themselves because they knew they were going to get fed or something. And he always, that blew his mind that you could stand down at the bottom of the hill and just call down, "Home, sheep." And then they would come down. And he thought we were going to go bleeding like a sheep out there. He had no concept at all.
Yeah, because usually we'll call the dogs and dogs would listen, but then it's like other animals too. So I could definitely see that. Definitely see that. And so what happened? So after you grew up on a farm, and so what happened when you started to transition into adulthood? Were you like, did you go to college and then?
This was the weird double life that I lived. I lived on a farm during the week, and then on Saturday, Friday night through Sunday, every single weekend of my childhood, we went to Pittsburgh, where my dad, who was a Westinghouse engineer, would take us to ballet lessons or to the Carnegie Museum or the library. We'd get out books, we'd go to the theater, those types of things. And then Sunday, there was a local church near us, near the farm, and he would drive there, and that was the exchange point, that my mother would come pick us up after church on Sunday. And so I lived this kind of double life, right? Like, all right, now let me go get my boots on and get out into the barn. And then the next day is like, out in the ballet. It was, and my mother was a teacher, educated teacher. She had a college education. So like, it was always known that we were all going to go to college. That was never a question at all. In fact, I think my father was a little worried because I was the one who was the most interested in the farm activities. I think he thought I would stay behind. But no, I went to college in Connecticut. And actually, the first thing that I did when I graduated was I opened up a little store in South Norwalk, Connecticut, which was like a little craftsy store type of area that had little bakeries and other crafts. And I opened this little store so that I could sell the products, which by then we had a pretty well-developed product line. We had sheepskin slippers and coats, the yarn. We had sheepskin rugs, we had quilts. So we had quite a variety, actually, of products. And I thought, let me open my own business. So I opened the store. And there were a couple of reasons that did not work out very well. I did it for about a year. And one of the reasons is because it wasn't my thing. It was really my mother's thing, and I was just trying to help her. And I was 20. Was that it just it was just it was more an extension of the life I already knew rather than creating my own life and my own ideas and my own creativity. And I was a photography major in college, so I could have gone that route. And I also was very interested in music, which I still am. So after a year, I said, yeah, this isn't really working. And I moved to New York City, where I got a job, where I promptly realized why people don't like jobs, because you have to show up every day and you have to be like an employee. So, yeah, I didn't have very many quote unquote jobs. I did a lot of freelance work, and I learned this again is like early 90s, where CRM systems and customer relationship management databases. It was like the penicillin of its day. Like people were had Rolodexes and they had spreadsheets and they were building access databases and things like that. And we started working with my husband. We started a company selling and implementing CRM systems for small businesses, which, by the way, he still does. We're still in business together. I don't do that anymore. I got a little bored with the technology side of it. So I started focusing more just on the business owners and the challenges I had in terms of getting clients and the mindset issues that you face. And my niche really is new employees, like people that are maybe coming out of a job or have a business idea and they don't really know how to approach it. Because I really feel for those people. It's a struggle to get started.
Yeah. So you're using your creative brain to actually help people. So I guess when you were doing the sales part, the creativity was lacking and you were like, oh my God, I need to do something creative where I could actually use my mind, learn new things, deal with people. And then you found it, but then still within the same type of business, right?
Yes, exactly. It's really fun to untangle the challenges people have, which, by the way, again, as I was saying, that in the early 90s, CRM really was like that. Let's take your whole business and systematize it. And now most people are a lot more familiar with it. They've been using spreadsheets or they use monday.com or they use something. So we sell this software Maximizer, which is built for small businesses. It's a very mature product. It's basically a competitor to Salesforce. And the joy of helping people discover and make that system, it was lacking for me after, plus I got tired of doing tech support calls. Click left mouse button. No, click with the left. No, click with the left mouse. Left. No, try it again. Click with the left. That was a lot of the conversation. This is before you had Zoom. You couldn't see what people were doing.
Yeah.
It was a little like bailing hay.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand you because I just don't like doing things where it's just so repetitive. Like I get frustrated. I'm like, oh my God, I have to do something else. Even though it can make a lot of money, if it's just like the same thing over and over and over, my mind just, I can't take it. And I call myself a creative entrepreneur because of that. Like I could create a business off like that, whatever you have, I could create it, make it work, come up with systems. But to implement the systems and keep that going every day, I have to hire somebody or it's probably just not going to get done.
Yeah. I have a quiz on my website where that helps you understand your CEO leadership style. And one of those styles is what I call the chief enthusiasm officer. And the chief enthusiasm officer is somebody like yourself, I'm making a gander that if you took the quiz, you'd see. And it's somebody who has a lot of creative ideas and a little bit of shiny object syndrome, but the diligence of sitting down and working out those systems and that. Now there's the opposite end of the other side of the quadrant, which is the chief expert officer. And those are the people that love to do that work, that love to get in there and figure it all out and put it into spreadsheets and do those timelines and all that stuff, check off boxes when things are complete. So neither one is a better way of running your business, but it's really important to understand which one you are because you'll run into challenges if you don't understand that.
Yeah. What's the name of the website, by the way, so people can...
Sure. Okay. LizWolfCoaching.com. And that's Wolf with an E. So that's important to remember that it's not Liz Wolf without an E. LizWolfCoaching.com. And if you go, there's a pop-up, but if you can also go /quiz. And it's a short, fun quiz. It's great. It asks, you know, I tried to make it fun for people. And then at the end, you will get a very detailed, here's the benefits of your style. Here's the pitfalls of your style. Like a chief expert officer could spend so much time focused on getting more data and really understanding before making a decision or not. I have a friend slash client, but more of a friend who loves to talk to people to do what they would call like market research, right? And she's constantly doing market research. And she learns a lot of really great things. And I'm like, come on, let's get out there and do some sales calls. So you learn your style and it really helps you figure out your pitfalls.
Well, that's really good. I feel like that's something that a lot of people need. It's just to figure out like their style of doing business, because a lot of people end up getting frustrated with certain processes, but it's because this is not for you. You're better off at doing this, and whatever you're lacking, you could hire support or partner with somebody that could do what you don't like to do.
Yeah, it's a major downfall of entrepreneurs is spending time in the I really should be or I have to do these things. And you know, some people don't like getting on social media at all. Some people don't like writing blogs or doing video or different tasks. And then they're I know I should be doing that. And then that doesn't help anybody. Get somebody to help you that is excited to do that with you.
Yeah, and that's one thing I did discover also as an entrepreneur is just because I don't like doing something doesn't mean that someone else doesn't like it as well. Some people love editing. Some people love writing blogs. Some people love web development, and you just have to connect with them in some type of way. Say I'm working on the docuseries. I'm the executive producer and the filmmaker. He's just, I love editing. And I'm like, there's no way I could do that. Like, I just can't sit there and just listen to something repetitively and go through that process. It's not me, but I feel like everyone could find something to do within their style of entrepreneurship.
That's right. And that's why I created that quiz because I think one of the things, one of the pitfalls that we run into is thinking that we should be being a different way than we really are.
There we go.
Yeah. Oh, I
Yeah.
should be disciplined. I should be more disciplined. I should be working harder. There's all these ways that we resist what it is that we think we should be doing. Like you just said, it's actually as a coach, I would reflect back to you. I said, I can't do that. I can't sit there. We know you could, right? So if I said to you, okay, for $100,000, if you got this done by the end of the week and all you had to do was sit there and edit it, you could do it. But what we're recognizing is that's not your strength. That is not the best and most effective way for you to use your energy.
That's
Your energy
true.
is well used in creative spots. And then there's the opposite where some people like the first thing I do with my clients is talk about your vision. Because without your vision, that's like getting in a car and driving without putting the location in the, you don't know where you're going. You're just driving. It feels like you're doing something, but you're really not. So in doing the vision, some people will say, I never even thought, I'm terrible at thinking about this big vision. And meanwhile, if I'm sure if I asked you, you'd be like, I can totally see myself out there in the world creating all this stuff. And so everybody has their ways of working that we don't want to call one wrong or the one what's most effective for you. Let's hone those skills.
That is true, because actually I do edit my own podcast. I do that. But when it comes to like documentary style editing, where you're looking at 30 hours of footage and trying to fit it there, I was like, there's no way. But you are absolutely right. Like, I had to figure out how to do things that I can't afford to pay someone to do. So it's okay, this person's charging this. I don't really want to pay that. So let me just figure out a way to do it on my own so I could save money. And
Yeah.
then when I started, I was like, it's not that bad. So you gotta master it as you go. Now I make my own flyers. And I do enjoy the creative process of it though.
Yeah.
So,
Well,
yeah.
these are all good skills to have because even if you don't do it yourself, you need to know what you like. You need to know what you want.
Yeah.
Some people say, well, you never pursued photography or art. And that is true that I did not do that. And I could tell you. Now I understand in retrospect why I didn't, all the fears that I had, concerns that I really wasn't good enough, and no, despite all the encouragement and all that. But I could tell you that if I go onto my website, I could tell you if I like the way it looks or not. I could tell you if I do my business cards or my flyers or any promotional materials that I'm doing, whether it's an ad or whatever it is, I have that graphic background. And this is one of the ways that we undermine ourselves as entrepreneurs. We say, I can't tell you how many people tell me I'm not certified. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind is how many coaches out there aren't certified? Doesn't really matter. I don't say that though. I understand what you're thinking because you think that gives you some sort of credibility, which is the other another thing that slows people down is they get into this imposter syndrome, thinking, I don't have the experience. So I can't call myself a graphic designer, but I certainly can use my own life experience and the college education that I had, et cetera, to say what I know, what I do and don't like. And so we undermine our own credibility by not holding in high esteem our experience we do have.
That is a tactic that I use. I say if I know I don't like something, I'll at least try to do as much as I can first myself. So if I do hire somebody or put someone on, I know exactly what to look for and I know how I want it to be. So say I had a business where I was doing bids and things like that, and it was data entry. And I was just like, my best use of time is not data entry. I could be doing something else. So I basically train two people on how to do it for me. And then I work on what I'm best at doing. And then boop, the business skyrocketed. But I had to learn how to do it first myself and master it myself. And it's okay, now it's getting repetitive. Okay, now I could teach someone else to do it. And here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all part of the development of it. And I think also you want to have an experience so that you can help and support other people in that. And that's one of the reasons why my experience growing up on the farm and watching the struggles that my mother had, and then my own struggles when I started that business and basically failed. And there were the days when I didn't even go in, or it's a little embarrassing to talk about because I'm like, and I look back and see how irresponsible I was. But now I know that, oh, you're leaving customers waiting. I always like to say to people, I'm in the one step ahead program, in that I'm one or presumably more steps ahead, but everything I'm asking my clients to do, I'm doing. I'm getting more clients. I'm struggling with social media. I'm doing all the things. You got to get in there and do that data entry, the editing, the proofing, all of those things, so that when you pass it on to someone else, the standard to which you want it, and you can understand what they're going through when they're attempting to do it, what the challenges are.
And that's best for people who are creatives, because say growing up, I used to draw. I love art and I'm still the same. Like, my kids love to draw. Now my daughter just has one of her art pieces like featured in something like some type of event or whatever. They picked her art out of all of the students and was like, okay, we're going to feature this. But then it's just like, I don't necessarily have to lose that. I can use that skill for other things. And it's not that just because I like art and drawing that I have to be a painter. I could just use it in some type of way, which is like what I'm doing now. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't get me too far started on that, because I will tell you that I have a daughter who's in college now, and she's, yeah, I like my college, but why do they make 16-year-olds pick their school? You start when you're 16 looking at colleges and everything. And she said, some people know what they want, but I didn't really know what I wanted. And now I'm at the school and now I'm like, it's okay. And I thought, yeah, we have this, it is a cultural thing that we have where we want people to pick a certain thing and stick with it. And for some people, for my dad, he was an engineer at Westinghouse for 43 years. He essentially had the same job. But he used to tell us all the time that he always enjoyed it. He was doing challenging projects, and he was a bio or a thermodynamic expert, and he worked on big projects, never really had any specific ambition to do anything else. Meanwhile, my mother's at home bored out of her mind because she's trying to just be somebody that was nondescript, essentially. And once she got on the farm, that was like freedom for her. She was doing organic farming before anyone really talked about that. She was doing that community supported agriculture. She was learning how to shear sheep and really create something. And she dragged us along with her. So we went to these festivals. Phones didn't exist then, but if they had, there was no way I was going to be able to sit there and just go, I don't like this, mom. She used to dress up in colonial outfits. Okay. I was 11 wearing a colonial outfit, spinning wool in front of large groups of people. We have pictures of this, which now I could talk in front of hundreds of people. I have no fear about that. I love to perform. Sales. I've been doing sales since I was like 10 years old. I learned all the same disappointments. I learned about money. I learned about all of those things, basically, again, out of necessity. But those skills really helped me now because I'm not afraid to have a sales conversation with somebody. You know, when you're 11 having a sales conversation with somebody, and it means whether or not you're going to be able to pay your electric bill if they buy it or not, there's a lot at stake for you there. And in many ways, there was too much responsibility. I'm probably overly responsible because of it. Thanks, Mom. Love you.
Yeah, it's good to have some type of pressure, though, at a young age, because that also pushes your willpower. So say my parents, my mom owned a cookie company, right? And so at church, I would walk around with a basket of cookies and, okay, I'm going to try to sell as many as I can, because I knew if I sold a certain amount, they would take us out to eat after church. And I just love this restaurant. So I was like, okay, I'm going to sell as many as I can. And my mom told me just like a couple months ago, he used to sell the most, but that was my thing. If you put pressure on me, I could take it like wholeheartedly. I really don't care. And so it's funny how when I look at other people and I'm just like, why are you like this? But then I learned that I developed these skills when I was such a young kid where I could talk in front of people. It's not a, like I talk that almost every funeral, the majority of funerals I've been to, if they say someone wants to go, does someone want to come up and talk? I go up there and talk. And that's like a very hard time. Like almost every single year, I'm talking at a funeral, talking about someone, and people are like, wow, did you write that? Did you think, how did you come up? I'm like, man, I just went up there and just said what was on my mind. But it's just crazy how like you could develop these skills at such a young age. And I'm thankful for my parents for doing stuff like that. It's like when you're young, you really don't know. But now that you're older, you think that is normal. But when you're older, yeah, you deal with other people, you start to notice that this is not a normal thing. Like some people have no idea how to engage with others, how to speak to others, how to sell anything. Yeah.
First of all, I love that story. I could just see you walking around. I don't know how many members you have, but it reminds me because what my mother used to do, she, as I mentioned, she would come and pick us up at church and she would bring eggs and she would sell the eggs at church to the church. And every week people would be so happy because those are good fresh eggs and stuff. And my kids, it's a very strange thing because work so hard, be successful. And I would never say that I was a parent that was like, I want to make it easier on my kids. That wasn't really a conversation. I certainly have expectations of them, but let's face it, they had a lot easier of a life than I did. And it's interesting because my son has no entrepreneurial creativity interest. I'm sure he could be, and it's interesting to watch. So he grew up in this house where both John and I, very entrepreneurial, and he's looking for a job right now. Which is great. One is not better than the other. The key is, and to go back to something that you were saying earlier, is that our culture says, focus on this one thing, choose a college, choose a career, choose a major, then choose the career. And let me tell you something. I've been in business for 27 years, started out with the CRM world. Now I'm doing business coaching, which I absolutely love. Hello universe, very interested in continuing to do that. And meanwhile, I'm a bluegrass musician and I'm starting to, I registered the URL bluegrassjamsnearme.com. And I have a vision of, because when I go to other cities, I want to know where to go to jam and I can't ever find the information. So I was like, I'm going to start this website so people can go on and list. And now I'm going to focus. I'm way more excited to work on that, right? Getting people at my jams. I've got 550 people on my email list in New York City to come to my gym. Like people email me. It's like what you always talk about in business. My mailing list is growing so much. It's because people want to play bluegrass. Well, who am I to tell them that they shouldn't play bluegrass? I'm encouraging people. I'm teaching people how to jam. It's a whole thing. It's a whole new thing. And sure, I could say, well, that's silly. Why would I do that? But because it's exciting and fun, and it could turn into a whole new thing for me.
Yeah. And that's a good hobby to have. Like say for me, I'm like a part-time bodybuilder, but that's something that I like to do. I've been into that. But I do agree with you because, you know, what you said earlier, because it's like they want you to stick to just one thing. If you do, this is what you're about. This is your life. And you just want to be like, also to juggle. There's other things about me besides this work. Like the work is not my life. Because if I were to say, hey, I know this lady that's been an entrepreneur for 27 years and she's married, she has kids, and she lives in New York, but she plays a ukulele. People be like, what? That doesn't even mix, but it doesn't have to. This is just something that she enjoys to do.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I created a ukulele course because I was frustrated with how hard it was to learn the ukulele with the resources that I found, and not being critical of anybody else. And I was like, I know a method that works. And so I actually created an online ukulele course. I think I've sold maybe four or five of them so far. But that's not the point. That was a creative process that I did. It was fun. And you know what? By doing that, it was a low pressure way for me to learn how you create an online course. So now I know how to create an online course. And so now I do have other online courses as well about mindset for entrepreneurs and that sort of thing. So you would say, why are you creating a course to learn how to play the ukulele? What's that ever going to get you? It's going to get me a lot of knowledge, a lot of fun, a lot of interest. And I use it now when people want to learn. I say, I'll give you the code. You can get on. It's $47, but I'll give it to you for free. And now I've made a friend. Now I've made a raving fan. Now I have something that's a fun thing. And then they're going to come back again, right? They're going to say, I know a friend who might want to do it too. So you can't, when you squelch these creative ideas and this different variety of things, you shut off abundance in your life. You don't know where that idea is going to take you. Now, you do have to be a little careful about the shiny object syndrome, where I'm not following up with my prospects and my coaching business because I'm so much having so much fun over here, inviting people to my jams. I got to take care of business because that's my right now, that's the bread and butter. But that doesn't mean I can't spend time developing those other ideas. There's a lot out there.
So this conversation has been mostly about authenticity. So what's so important about being authentic for you?
Any time that I have ever felt like I've got to be somebody that I'm really not, and I think there's so much comparison that happens in our entrepreneurial world. I could, in fact, it's almost a scourge where when I talk to people, they're like, oh, other people got to six figures in 60 days, or other people have TV specials or whatever that is. And so we're constantly doing this comparison game and look trying to emulate those people because it looks to us like what they're doing is working. But what we're missing is what's really working is that person being authentic to who they are. And the work that I need to do is to figure out what's authentic to me. And so I figured this out a long time ago about myself. I will never write you an email in the beginning of the year that says, make 2024 your best year ever. That very hypey kind of a thing. Because I don't know, I've had a lot of really awesome years. So how do I know that 2024, I don't want to hype you up to some high level of expectation and then see you get disappointed. I would rather see you authentically think about what would be fulfilling to you? What would be if you accomplished that this year, how would that really impact your life and other people's lives? And focus more in that zone of, we know this, quote unquote, wealth is not what's going to bring you joy. It's the creation of the wealth that comes from your authentic expression of your own joyful knowledge and creativity. That's the wealth that you then results in that.
Wow, that's amazing. Because I was a big victim of trying to put myself in positions to do things that weren't really authentically me. And I was wondering, like, how is this person so successful and I'm not? But that's because they gave their all. Like, it was their life. They were so encompassed with it. And me, I was looking at it more so, okay, I'm going to make some money. This is going to make me money. It's about the money. But then I remember reading, I'm a big fan of self-help books, and I let my ego get in the way, by the way, as well. But they will say, you should do something that you're passionate about or something that you love. And I would be like, oh, what is that? What does that really mean? I mean, I forget what they're talking about. I need to do this because people are making money doing this, or this is a new thing, the new hot thing. So I'm about to get into this. Then I realized, man, I'm really selling myself short by doing these type of things, because the stuff that I'm doing now, people suggested to me like 4 or 5 years ago, but it was me sabotaging myself and not doing it. And I'm just like, I don't have any regrets, but I'm just like, what if I would have just listened? Because a lot of times people observe you and say, we're in our own heads, but if somebody's been knowing you for years, they'll say, well, you probably will be good at this. Or you're probably good at this based off of what I observe and me knowing you for all of this time. But then I feel like the ego gets in the way and be like, ah, nah. I say I have somebody in the family, I go say who, but they just love talking to people. They're loud and they love to engage. And I was like, and I hit them up one time. I was like, have you ever thought about getting into sales? Nah, that's not my thing. I'm like, but you do that every day anyway. Like, you love people, you love crowds, you love, like, you would be phenomenal in sales. But it just didn't click. And I'm just like, hey, all right.
Yeah, one of the things you really have to remember about those showboaty people that you're sometimes comparing yourself to is, number one, it's not always true. I had a situation where there was a company that I was I did some consulting work for, and I couldn't get this guy to pay my $500 invoice. And he would get up and do these presentations and talk about his record-breaking year. And I'm thinking, you can't pay my $500 invoice, but you're talking about your record-breaking. Like, he had cash flow issues. It wasn't that he wasn't making the money, he had cash flow issues. So it's not always, and eventually paid me, and he's a great guy, but it's not always what you think. Because have you ever seen that video of the guy that basically hired some people? He put on cool glasses and he hired some bodyguards and rented a car and drove around and went in restaurants and pretended to be somebody, and people was, oh, who's that? Who's that?
I
But he was
understand.
nobody. Yeah, he was nobody. But he created the environment where he's showed up in a way that people are accustomed to looking at that and saying, oh, that must be somebody. He did this whole YouTube thing on it. I watched it a few years ago. Again, I wish no one ill will and whatsoever. I'm mostly concerned about making sure that if you're looking at something, there's a couple things. One is it may not actually be real. The other thing is they're not talking about how hard it was. They're talking to you from the level where they are now versus the 6 years ago or the 10 years ago. You've heard that it took me 10 years to be an overnight success, right? So they don't tend to talk about that. And then when you try to follow their methodology, they're teaching you from that high level place. This happens in music all the time. People are like, let me just show you that lick. I'm like, I don't even know what a lick is. So you could try whatever. So you have to be okay with the level that you're at and have your own personal goals. And then, of course, as a coach, this is what I help people with, is to figure out what is that vision and what is authentic for you. And then, yeah, I want to get you to whatever level that you want to get to. But I don't want you feeling you're this imposter or inadequate in the face of that, because you don't even know what that is. That's just smoke and mirrors over there. We got to figure out what's right for you.
That's true though. I actually had a call with a guy that said he's gonna help me with marketing, and he was like, this guy made $400,000 in a month. And then I was like, okay. And he was like, so what would make you sign up today? I was like, how about you show me the bank statement of the person that made $400,000 a month? I was like, that's what will make me make a decision today. Because my background is finance. So I did mortgages, and so I've seen credit reports, like everything. When you're doing a mortgage, tax returns, you see it all. And it's just like a lot of people fluff. It's crazy.
That
But
is.
that's the only telltale sign, like, for me to know that you actually made the money. Like, I work for banks. And I know you could tell me anything. And but then also notice that some people could tell you that they make $40,000 a month. Like, how do you know that they're telling the truth besides
Exactly.
looking at their bank statement? And then they sell you, you could live like me. And this, are you really doing it how you say you're doing it?
That's right. And the other thing that I've had many of those same conversations. And first of all, what would make me sign up today? I love that. I'm never going to forget that. But the other thing is, what would make me sign up today is show me all the people that didn't do what you said, that hired you and did not accomplish what you said. I want to know why didn't they do that? I always like to say to people, I bought that $10,000 program, so you don't have to. And one, I bought a $2,000 program about creating online courses. And this is a very successful course developer person. She's got a lot of people in her group, and men and women. It's great. And the way she bills it is, this is a way for you to start your business. Now, as a coach that helps people start their businesses, I'm very interested in this. And what I discovered after people spent their $2,000 on her course is that they had no idea how to start a business, and that there's so much more to starting a business than recording a course and selling it. What about your email list? What about your business structure? What about your messaging, your niche, your, like, there's so many things. You can't do that in a 6-week course or an 8-week course, even if it did cost you $2,000. Yes, there are people that rise to the top, and there's a lot of people that sink to the bottom. And so I want to know, what are we doing to help those people? What is your technique for the people that come to you and say, I tried that 6 times already and it didn't work for me? And it might have worked for that $400,000 guy, but it wasn't working for me. So what are you going to do different for me? Because what if that $400,000 system you used doesn't work for me? I just gave you my money. What are you going to do now?
Yeah, that is very powerful because the person that made all of that money, you don't know their prior experience. They probably already had a crowd, or they probably already had 100,000 followers, and now you gave them like a few nuggets and they piggybacked off of that, and then boom. And I experienced that with a friend of mine that bought a course, and he was just like, "Oh, it works, it works, it works." I'm like, "Bro, it works for you because you already had 150,000 followers. Like the other people, they don't have that. Like you already look like Superman. You're more ripped than the guy who sold you the program. So of course this fitness program is gonna work for you because he just gave you a couple of things and then boom, you're taking off because all you needed was like a few micro suggestions." And then he was like, "Oh, okay." Because as I say, if you're selling to somebody that's just starting off or have 2,500 followers or 3,000 and they are doing the same things, it's not gonna work for them. So it's funny, like it's good that you say that because some people they'll give you like what they're doing and not what they've done. And I was like, this person is leaving out information on what they've done to actually get to where they are at. And this he has a YouTube channel, and YouTube is the highest search engine, and people are looking for advice and things on YouTube, and YouTube funnels to other things. And I was like, if you don't have that, then it's like, how are people going to reach you? You can't just post things onto your story every day expecting to get traction. It's not going to work like that. You need other or avenues and organic traffic to for people to find you and find who you are, unless you're going to pay for ads, you know. And it's just, man, I like the way I see it because I've been doing business for years online and stuff like that, and I'm just like, wow, a lot of people are giving people information that's never going to work for them, and they are horrible teachers. And then there's pride too. It's a lot.
Yeah, and online courses. And again, I have online courses. And one of the reasons I took that $2,000 course is because I'm working on creating a course that helps, because not everybody either wants to or can hire a coach. So I want to make an accessible training for people that want to start a business and are just aren't in a, they just want to get started. That's really what online courses are really good for. Of course, they're always not that effective because people don't do them. But nevertheless, so many online courses really are, I'm going to give you the step by step. And here's another good example. I spent $995 on a YouTube ads course. This is now a few years ago. And I like to use it as one of my examples because I tried to do it and I got on. He would have these calls. He probably still has them. Great guy. He's very successful at what he does. And then you got in the back end, he would show you the back end of his YouTube ads, like the dashboard and the ads. He had like 300 ads going at any given time. And he's turning them on and off, and he's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars making hundreds of thousands of dollars, but he's literally, and I'm looking at this going, you didn't show us this dashboard when you sold me that 995 course. My bad. I'm not blaming the guy. He clearly knows what he's talking about, but
I don't
it's,
have that type of
I don't have that kind of money. I don't have that kind of energy, interest. You know, I just chalked it up. I use it sometimes as an example to show, yeah, don't do this. Don't buy a $995 because I wasn't prepared. I didn't have the video. There was so much. And man, did he make it sound easy because he'd been doing it.
Exactly. And I didn't fall for that because I'm like, I've been working on my website, getting the content together. Because I'm like, if I pay for advertising, I have to make sure all of my stuff is ironclad. I'm not going to start off a business and then pay for advertising. No, you have to develop that business first, put stuff on YouTube, get some content out, make sure you have content on Instagram, make sure it's, you have to have all of these things in place because people are going to research you and check you out. There, you're not going to just have an ad and then, oh, I don't have a website. What? Like, no, if people Google your business and Google your name to make sure you're legit, things have to be there. And so I was just like, I'm working from the ground up. I just have to do, put out content, put out as much as I can, and then I'm ready to start advertising to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And what that reminds me of is a lot of people are like, what about social media? Should I be posting on social media? And I'll say, yeah, the thing is, what you want is when people go to visit your website or go to visit your social media. There's nothing sadder than a social media account where the last time you posted was like 9 months ago. Now, will you get clients through that? Some people do. Some people are really successful at getting clients from social media. I've never really gotten any clients from just posting on social media. But I'm not saying that you can't do that. What I am saying is that you got it, that foundation you just referred to is so important. And so many of these get rich quick experience trainings and promises make it seem like just run ads. You could spend $5,000 on ads and not get anything. And nothing is a better example of this for me than the fact that I'm now putting together this bluegrass jamming group in New York City. You wouldn't think there'd be that many jammers in New York City, but there are. And people reach out to me. It's so beautiful to see the organic growth of it. And I'm like, oh, this is what people talk about when people just want to sign up for your mailing list and you don't have to chase them down. You don't have to do anything. You just do fun stuff and they want to come. I was like, oh, finally, after 27 years in business, I'm experiencing. Now, I'm not monetizing it yet, but it's really beautiful to see happen that way when you connect with people that way.
I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that. Because that's the way, I mean, because you could spend $5,000 on ads and not get a dime. That's one of the most easiest things to do, especially on Google. Like I spend money on ads and I'm like, golly, is one person going to reach out to me? But it's better for you to create such a force where people are looking for you. And that's the way I like to do it because trust me, I say once people are looking for you and you have enough content out there and you run ads, then that makes sense. But there's definitely like a method to do it. Like I wouldn't just start off and then just start running ads. There's no way I would do that.
And that
No way.
$400,000 person, they, you don't know, they might have spent $300,000 on ads to make the.
Yeah. Now, seriously, that's the case too, because a lot of people, their profits are so minimal because they spend so much on client acquisition. And that's another thing because I'm like, that's gross. Like I've been in finance my whole life. Like I could figure it out. It's like, oh, our profit, okay. Organically, okay. Come on, man. Like you could make sense of it. But not to say that they're fooling people, but somebody's getting fooled because everybody doesn't have my background or your background to be able to see the kinks in the armor.
So I'm guessing he didn't have the bank statement of the $400,000 person to show you, did
Nah, not at all. No, that's personal. Yeah, I bet it is. Okay. Like, that's a lot of money. Do you know how many people you have to sign up to get that much? That is crazy. So I'm just like, that's depending on, how, even if you were charging $4,000, that's quite a bit of people to be managing and to deal with.
Yes, that's the other thing. And I know this is really an awesome conversation, but I will say the one other thing is that You have to be ready to receive that level of business. You that you have to you have to have the context, this the structure, the systems set up. I met this guy once who said he was a musician, and he said he and his brother had done this video on YouTube and it had gone viral. And he so every musician's dream, right? To have your email, your video go viral. And he said, we weren't prepared and we couldn't keep up. People were commenting. For a while, he was getting like radio interviews and different things. It was some kind of cute video with him and his brother and doing some comedy and all that. He said, we couldn't keep up. It just faded away because we did it and we did that, but we couldn't build on it. We weren't structured to, we couldn't respond to all the comments. I don't know if they had jobs or what they had. So that really stood out to me because you think, oh, I want to get to that pinnacle level. But what you're missing is if you don't have that foundation, you won't be able to handle those clients even if they come your way. Yeah, you gotta have that structure set up. And that's in some ways what I didn't talk to your $400,000 salesman guy, but you got to ask those types of questions. What's needed? What did that person have in place that would have him be him or her be successful?
Yeah, that's true. I had a big argument with someone about that too, because I don't need this and I don't need that. I'm like, okay, once you grow your business and people are contacting you, so you have to have a system in place. Even though it might seem tedious now, it's best to have all of that prepared before the storm comes. Like, you have to have a funnel, you have to have all kind of things connected. Like you mentioned Monday.com. I'm a project management professional by trade, but I'm like, why don't I have Monday.com for my business? What am I doing? But I keep everything in my head. But now that I'm working with other people, I'm like, no, I need to have it organized. I need to have everything just ironclad right then and there. Because it's like, for me, I'm like, I'm pretty smart dude. I could keep everything up there, but I'm like, nah, we have to create a system, man. You have a lot going on.
Can't delegate to other people what's in your brain. That's
Exactly.
one reason CRM systems are that helpful for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Liz, if you were to give someone some advice, they're just starting off with a business or idea or something like that, what would you say?
The first thing you want to do is get people around you that support you. I have one client who literally has told no one else in her life of what she's doing. And that's why she, except for me, like she hired me specifically to support her. A lot of people in your life won't support you in the way that you would like to be because they're going to be questioning you. And you want to make sure that the people that are giving you support and advice and coaching have the experience to do that. I got nothing against moms, sisters, brothers, dads, cousins, uncles, aunts, but if they're not in business for themselves or a business coach or something, and they try to give you like, why are you even trying to do that entrepreneurial thing? Or just undermining, having you doubt or question, you don't talk to them about your business. Find people that you will most supportive to you to have your business be a success.
Thank you. That's amazing. And so, Liz, where can people find you?
LizWolfCoaching.com. Of course, if you want to do that quiz, lizwolfcoaching.com/quiz. That's Wolf with an E. And I would love to hear from you. And again, if you take the quiz, I'll give you some good feedback for you to be able to understand what some of your challenges and some of your strengths are so that you can actually make your business a success. That's my dream, to help people be successful.
Liz, it's been an awesome conversation. I actually learned a lot. But I guess that's the benefit of having a podcast, is from learning from people that have experience. So it's like I'm getting consulted in a way, but you gave some very sound advice that could help many people. And I appreciate you for coming along and
Yeah,
sharing your
thank you.
wisdom.
Thank you for sharing, extending the invitation. For sure, it's been a lot of fun. You never know what to expect when you get on a podcast, but this has surely been a very enjoyable one. Yes, very much
Thank
so.
you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Have a good rest of your day.
Okay, thank you.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.